You're listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. Joining us today, Dave Eisenstatter, editor of the Valley Advocate, and making her shortlist debut, Elizabeth Roman, reporter and editor with the Springfield Republican and El Pueblo Latino. Good to see you again, Dave and Liz. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
This week, groups in Massachusetts looking to put ballot questions before voters in 2020 had to turn in certified signatures to the Secretary of State's office in order to stay on track. Tommy Hickey with the Right to Repair Coalition, which is pushing for a question on auto repair, says getting the required 80,000-plus signatures, which they did, is hard work.
We have over 3,000 repair shops in Massachusetts. A lot of them were out there collecting signatures with their customers, and we had some volunteers. We have over 3,000 consumers as a part of our coalition.
Dave, backers of other questions looking at ranked choice voting, nursing home funding, and beer and wine sales, among others, say they have enough signatures, but one seeking to end taxpayer funding for abortions fell short. Did any of these catch your eye?
Well, I'm really happy to see that question that would limit abortion failed again. It's despicable that this happens every 2 years, 2015, 2017. It just makes it clear that we really need to pass the Roe Act in the legislature. I'm also interested in the ranked choice voting. I think that's a really interesting thing that some states are doing. Maine has tried it out, and I think that it'll be interesting to see whether Massachusetts voters are interested in that here.
Liz, getting all those signatures is just another step in a very lengthy process, which might also include legislative action, and lacking that, having to get even more signatures.
Right.
Is this process fair or is it too hard?
You know, I thought a lot about this before coming here because I didn't know what the process was. So I looked it up, and if it doesn't be made into law, then you have to go back and get more signatures, and then it gets on the ballot. And I think it is fair in the sense that a binding question on a ballot is a big deal. So you don't want someone to just be able to get, 15,000 signatures and get some major question on the ballot, get a little group of people to go out and vote, and suddenly you have major change that's going to affect the entire state. But at the same time, you have groups that don't have necessarily the resources to be able to get, 20,000 volunteers to go out and get 80,000 signatures. So maybe a little less signatures, but not too much less, because you do want it to be work and you want to make sure that people know what it is that they're getting into.
Staying with elections, the two Democrats challenging Massachusetts U.S. Senator Ed Markey have taken a pledge to keep outside money out of their campaigns. Congressman Joe Kennedy and attorney Shannon Liss Reardon are both calling on Markey to do the same.
So that this campaign will be decided by the people of Massachusetts, not by dark money, not by special interests.
That was Liss Reardon speaking at a press event earlier this week. Markey's campaign says he agrees with much of the pledge, but says he will continue to accept money from progressive groups with what his campaign calls positive campaign messages. Liz, what do you make of the senator's reluctance to join his two challengers on this?
Well, I think it's pretty clear. He wants to be able to get money from environmental groups. There's a lot of money coming into him. I think they pledged something like $5 million to his campaign. So he's talking about this positive ad campaigning from these outside groups. But I understand Liz Reardon's point, too. She said multiple times, it's very subjective. What is positive? You could think that this ad created for this candidate is great for him, but for the other two candidates, it might not look the same way.
Dave, is Markey opening himself up to criticism by going along with this decision?
Yeah, I'm going to criticize him right now. I'm sympathetic to these progressive organizations that have had to build up a huge money apparatus to counteract conservative groups. But outside money is outside money. You can't, if you want to be progressive on the topic of campaign finance, you can't just pick and choose who you're going to get your money from. And I think that all three candidates should pledge not to accept this outside money, and when they're in the Senate, should pledge to work towards campaign finance reform.
Moving along, meanwhile this week, Connecticut's treasurer announced the state would divest its investments of civilian gun makers. Currently, there are about $30 million in pension funds tied up with these companies, and Massachusetts Treasurer Deb Goldberg has been pushing for something similar. Dave, Connecticut's treasurer Sean Wooden says given all the lawsuits against gun makers, they're a risky investment. But what about the larger message here, especially given the Sandy Hook school shooting in 2012 that took place in Connecticut?
I would say bravo to Connecticut, and we should be doing this in Massachusetts. I think the gun manufacturers need to be held accountable in some way. And as Washington is paralyzed in terms of making any kind of law, this is a way to do it. I mean, I also think that the state should be looking at divesting from other things, fossil fuels, private prisons, pharmaceutical companies, and even possibly some tech companies that have been shown to have monopolies and are undermining our democracy.
Liz, Dave brings up fossil fuel companies. Some colleges and universities have divested themselves of those corporations. Is this sort of a thing, an effective strategy to send a message?
I think so. It's the best way to send a message about what you support and what you don't support. And another interesting thing about the policy is that he's asking banks to disclose that they work with gun companies before they have the ability to work with the state. So they're taking it a step further. And I think it shows where they stand. And I think for a state like Connecticut, obviously that tragedy affected everybody and in the neighboring states as well. And interestingly enough, he did this in December, and the incident happened on December 14th in 2012. So it makes sense that the legislation would, or this policy would, come up at this time.
We wrap up this week with barn swallows. When they return to a wildlife refuge in Hadley, Massachusetts next spring, they might have to find a new place to nest. U.S. Fish and Wildlife officials say a barn that's been home to about 40 pairs will be torn down because they say it's in dangerously poor condition and just isn't needed anymore. Some bird advocates, though, are upset and are worried this will impact the colony, which is believed to be among the largest in Massachusetts. Liz, this has been an ongoing discussion for about a year, year and a half. What's your take on it?
So I didn't even know what swallows look like before I read this article, so I'm glad that I read the article because they're absolutely beautiful, and I learned that they are great pest control, and they're lovely animals. But at the same time, I mean, Fish and Wildlife has the right to do what they want to do with this barn. If they want to tear it down, they can tear it down. If it's not serving them, if they want to use that space for something else, you know, they have the right to do it. That being said, I would love for them to figure out a way to move those nests to another spot of their property where, you know, the birds could go. But I don't know about science, so I don't know if that could be done or not.
Well, they did mention that there's a possibility that they will open up another building on their property for that maybe to happen, to allow the swallows to nest there. Dave, what do you think about all of this?
It's a tricky situation. I think the normal logical thing, and or most cases, would be to let this building go. It's in really bad shape. It's in bad repair. But at the same time, climate change is affecting us in so many different ways, and it feels like shaking things up by unnecessarily tearing down this building and forcing these animals to find other habitats is exactly how we're messing up the planet in so many different ways.
All right, Dave Eisenstadter of the Valley Advocate, Elizabeth Roman of the Republican, and El Pueblo Latino, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. You can also listen to us whenever you want at Apple Podcasts or by going to nepr.net/podcast hub. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.